This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Mikey, David, how are you boys doing today?
Doing well.
You know, we're a little disappointed today because we heard that Nico is not traveling to Japan. And I mean, I get it. It's a little bit early. They're going to break camp and they're going to open the season against the Dodgers. You just kind of were hoping everyone would be up and running. And we've been told that very unlikely that Matt Shaw makes that trip. So you're missing two-fourths of your infield, or the projected starting infield, when you turn up in Japan. That's not as ideal. And again, there's a second opening day, the domestic opening day, and then there'll be a home opener. So hopefully you see plenty of Nico and plenty of Matt Shaw, but it's just a kind of a bummer they're not going to be there to open the season in Japan.
It's a lot of openers, Mike.
It is. It's a lot of openers.
It's like Vegas. Opening night.
We get a lot of openers. It was kind of expected, to be honest. Like, when I got down here or out here, I had a chance to talk to Nico the very first day, and, you know, his work was still somewhat limited in what he was doing. So you just kind of knew that was probably going to be the case for Nico. I would anticipate the Cubs, so you're going to miss those two guys in the games in Japan. And this is straight from Counts and talking to him. This was a week ago. He told me, the lineup may look a little different in Japan than it does opening day. We should be at full strength come opening day here in Arizona when we play the Diamondbacks. So, he still wasn't sure yet, but you're kind of hedging your bet, looking and going, okay. So then you've got to give some other guys, the Birdies and Nicky Lopez and some of those guys, a little more of a look at different positions to see what you got maybe for the series in Japan. So that's just where you stand. I think Nico's in really good spirits. I see him on a daily basis almost at the ballpark, and he seems fine, and I'm really excited to see Shaw, the guy that really needs to be out there playing and showing what he can do is Matt Shaw. So Bruce kind of broke that out here yesterday or the day before that Shaw might play this weekend. So I'll look forward to seeing him play on Sunday, hopefully.
We all will, because we have not seen him yet, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch him kind of develop. But if he's on a pace to maybe not open until it's back in the States. Coom, take a stab at the opening day infield. Is Nicky Lopez a guy at second base? Do you think that Gage Workman makes a team and is it third or is it John Birdie? What do you think the opening day infield will look like?
It's a good question. I still think it's still up in the air, David.
Wait, Coom, before you finish, which of the openers?
The first one.
Oh, okay.
The first one
is
being difficult.
I am being difficult.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of lining up on the lines for games, right?
Yeah.
Can't we just do that once and try not three times? Wow. And we got the exhibition games. You're going to do it then too in Japan. We're going to have a lot of that, a lot of ceremony for these ball games. But I think you're looking at a guy. Workman looks very good. Hmm. He showed, he's a big, strong kid and really can pound the ball. and use the other side of the diamond, which to me was very encouraging. He's hit an opposite field homer. He's hit a couple opposite field doubles. And I thought, huh. And Counts seems to think his best position, I haven't really seen him play a lot defensively, but he goes, his best position is third base. He's third baseman. And I go, okay. Well, you know, he's out of options, basically, is what you're saying. He either makes the team or he goes back. So, Nicky Lopez, you kind of know what you're getting. Nicky's a really nice young guy from Naperville Central, and, you know, you really pull for the local guys. And I'm hoping he makes the team and makes the team going to Japan. And I think Birdie is one of those people, you know what you get. So I would anticipate Lopez probably being on the club going to Japan. You know, so you got three kind of utility guys would probably make the team going to Japan would be my guess. I'm not 100% sure, but that would be a guess.
They've had a remarkable opening to camp. They are unbeaten. They have a couple of draws, but no one has been able to beat the Cubs. And I think that's a good thing. Do you need to lose sometimes so you learn something? Or what's your take on the way that they're getting their work done and still not getting beaten?
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I don't really pay too much attention to the record in spring training, although you want to win every day. Mm-hmm. You don't want to lose. And I think what's happened is the young guys have played very well. Offensively, they've done their job. When the young guys come into the game in the second half of the ballgame, they've put some at-bats together, they've situational hit, they've drove in driving in runs, and it's been pretty good. So the Cubs have won some games late that were, you know, going back and forth a little bit or not a lot of run scoring. So that's a positive when you see the young guys contributing and doing well. But I don't pay close attention to the win-loss record. If I'm watching the games, if I'm watching day after day, which I am obviously down here, I just want to see how well guys are playing. And I think you're looking at a lot of the regulars you're going to see every day playing very well. Happer's playing outstanding, looks good at the plate. Tucker looks good at the plate. Both of those guys just missed hitting home runs into the wind yesterday here. So the team looks good.
Kevin Alcantara Coombe has opened some eyes, and I think he probably is ticketed for Iowa, but I just wonder, he's gotten a lot of attention, he's had a ton of success. What do you think about his ceiling, and has your opinion of him changed this spring?
I don't know if you can put a ceiling on that kid, David. He's one of those kids, you know, he's big, tall, rangy, strong. You know, he's gotten he's had some great at bats. He's, you know, does a lot of things well. So, at the end of the day, for all these young kids, when you play well, you open eyes. And he's playing well and he's opening eyes. And they knew he's talented, but you're like, hey, force him to make tough decisions. That's the way, you know, when you speak to young players in the minor leagues, force them to make tough decisions on you because you're playing so well. Every other team is looking at that too, and he is doing that. He's, you know, and he gives you some options because he can do a lot in outfield too. So it's really cool to see him play well and kind of take this opportunity, even though the outfield's pretty stacked, and make the Cubs make some tough decisions in what they're doing.
What is it that you like most about this team? You know, we had this conversation about the White Sox, and we decided, you know, can't hit, can't pitch, worried about the bullpen, and their defense is awful. You know, you kind of, there is no unit that you say, oh, well, they always have that. The Cubs seem to be the opposite story, but is there one element of their team that appeals to you more than others from what you've seen thus far?
I would say it's an intangible. It's not something that you can see on the field, like because a guy's fast or he can throw hard. Or I think it's an intangible. I think this group has a confidence about them because you got a lot of guys that have had success in our league, and some of them have had a lot of success in the league. And there's almost that something to play for, and you're looking and you're like, there's a lot of good players here. You know, you don't have that extreme superstar guy. you know, Sammy was here in camp, and Sammy Sosa was a legitimate superstar when he was playing. We don't have one of those guys. Tucker's a very good player.
Yeah.
But you got some very good players. But there's that thing, Mike, that I'm seeing day to day, and you're like, these guys are there's something there. And that's an intangible that you don't see all the time. But as an ex player, and I'm watching, I'm like, oh, they got a lot of good things. If things fall into place, you could see this team rattling off a lot of wins and making it really tough on an opposing team because they got speed, they got defense, they can pitch it, they got successful bullpen arms with young bullpen arms that are good arms. You know, so there's a lot of things, you know, you haven't seen that with the Cubs over the last couple of years. You know, and then you had a guy, you know, coming out of coming off the bench that's 40 years old, and he's working with everybody on hitting, and you're like, I like it. I'm liking what I'm seeing, you know, because he's got some things that he can bring to the table that are just unique. So it's pretty cool.
What did you think of Shota Imanaga's first outing, and how much confidence do you have in him and his ability to replicate the kind of success he enjoyed last year?
I have a lot of confidence in him. I don't say this about pitchers too often because you know how I feel about pitchers. they're a necessary evil for our game. Someone's got to put the ball in place so we can play, right, Mikey? You know, I'm like, but he's a baseball player, and he sees the game. He's a baseball guy, and you can tell. And he likes to play, and he's got that, you know, that energy about him, and I love that. And he's got the thing that's making pitchers real successful in the big leagues right now. He has all those. He's got command. He's got location of his fastball up in the zone and in where he's getting a lot of chase with that and foul balls and routine fly balls. And he's got the split that's making it difficult. You know, as you know, almost a two pitch pitcher, he can really pitch in the league with some good location and moving the ball around. I expect him to have the same type of success he did last year.
You know, whenever we talk about the difference from one year to the next, we kind of focus in on the fact that they blew 26 saves a year ago. And if you can have that, all of a sudden you're a 90-win club. How does the bullpen look? And I kind of like the intangible thing you were telling us. How does it look top to bottom? Not necessarily who's in what role or who's, but they made a lot of changes. They added a lot of arms. How does it look generally speaking?
I think it looks much, much better than it did. You have a closer now that has something to pitch for because you brought him in and he didn't close last year. And he wanted to, and they brought in the elite closer, right? The Astros did with the lefty they brought in. Now, he's one of those guys that he's got something to prove, but he's pitched in the league a long time, and he's had a lot of success in October, not just the regular season, but in October. And that really helps the young guys now that are right in line, right in behind him. So now all of a sudden you're looking at Presley having an effect that pushes some guys into roles that are going to be much more palatable if you're Craig Counsell to seeing young kids pitching in the sixth and seventh and eighth than handing them the ball going, oh, he really hasn't been in this situation in Dodger Stadium trying to get three outs against, you know, three superstar players, but here you go, here's the ball. Now you got that veteran guy who you go, good batter, he's going to throw the ball over the plate, we're going to take our chances, and we got a shot at winning today. That's that thing that changes.
You look at the pitching staff, Coom, and Matthew Boyd is here. Drew Smyly is not. I wonder, is he replacing Smyly, or what do they have in store for Matthew Boyd, and what role do you envision him playing?
I think Boyd's going to be in the rotation. I really do. He's a guy, as long as he's healthy, David, I've seen him pitch against us last year, and he was healthy, and he was very good at times. His biggest issue is just staying healthy, being on the field. He's got he does a couple things really well. That he's got a very good changeup that kind of fades off to the righties, and he's got a fastball that he throws back and forth off of those that come out looking the same to me, and that's very effective. But when you can pitch inside with that, like Steele does, and like Hicks did the other day, Wicker throwing fastballs inside. I think all of a sudden now you're like, okay, that's good. So it would not surprise me if he's healthy, he's in the rotation.
I'm curious when you talk about a guy, you know, we know Nicky Lopez because he's been in town and he is from here. But when you talk about a guy like Bruhan, I saw him working with Sammy the other day. How does he look in terms of challenging Lopez for that roster spot?
Very good. That's a tough one. I think you're looking at guys, you know, Bruhan is they brought him in. That's going to be that last spot on the roster.
Yeah.
And when you start looking, okay, who's – it could come down to just who's healthy. Right, Mike? You just don't know. You got to play out camp now and see what's going to end up happening. You know, does Nicky make the team because, you know, he's playing really well? Does he not? Does Bruhan make the team? Bruhan can do some different things, too. They both can. They can both play shortstop. They can both run around. Bruhan's probably got a little more pop in his bat. But he strikes out a lot. So I think for both guys, you know, it could come down to who's just healthy, you know, and you just got to see, you got to play out spring training. But that'll be one of them last couple day, I believe, decisions for the Cubs.
Justin Turner arrived, brought his bat with him. We saw that already, Coom. He can hit, falling out of bed. You wonder, though, when he talks about not having to play third base, And maybe he won't have to, and that'll be everything will play out as usual. But what do you think? Is he an option there if Matt Shaw is late to the party or for whatever reason isn't ready? Do you think that the Cubs in the back of their minds, is that plan B or is that plan, you know, doesn't have a letter attached because it's too far down the road?
I would say it would definitely be something you would look at. There's no doubt, you know, the question would be, David, okay, do you want to put the 40-year-old guy at third base for 2 weeks, let's say, every day, and run the risk of him getting hurt and then being on the disabled list? Or do you play him at first, or maybe you play him at third a day, and then he DHs, and then he gets a day off, and you monitor that enough to keep him healthy? But in a pinch, I don't see why Counts wouldn't play him at third if he doesn't have other options. You know, right now you've got some utility guys that give you options. But, you know, Turner, he looks fine. He doesn't look any different than he did, you know, wearing a Dodger uniform over the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, but he's a guy you really want to keep on your active roster. So you really want to watch that, to me, and how much you're going to play him maybe at third base.
It's obviously so early in the season and everything, but we have a good feel for what the outfield is going to look like. How do you think Seiya Suzuki will react to being most likely a DH? We had this conversation with Frank Thomas one time where he talked about how difficult – he was a first baseman – and how difficult it was for him to become a DH. And you think of him as a DH, and he had great years as a DH, but he said it was not an easy transition. What's it like – for a guy that has always been an outfielder, and will he play in the outfield in Japan? Is he okay with being the DH for the international opener?
I would say he's going to DH. Mm-hmm. He's going to DH a lot. He's going to play some outfield. He's going to play a little left. He's going to play a little right. He's going to, you know, when the guys get a break, but you're going to see Hap and Tucker playing in the outfield regularly. So, you know, I think he's already come to that conclusion. That's been, you know, the Cubs weren't shy in telling them what they expected and what was going to happen. So I think you've got to kind of get your mindset ready for that. I'll agree to this, though. I think DHing is very difficult to do for a position player that isn't just getting a day off and he's DHing. You know, he's getting a day off from playing. So he's going to have to find a routine that helps him get himself prepared for an at-bat. The guy that was the best I ever saw that I ever played with was Paul Molitor. Paul, he was a great defensive player, but because of injury, second half of his career, he didn't, you know, play in the field much. But he would – Paul, he had a routine, and he just could walk up there, and he was going to get two hits, and you're just like, yeah, oh, I'm – you know, so it's not an easy job, though. I would agree to what Frank had to say also. I, you know, played against Frank for many, many, many years. It's a tough thing to do.
Great stuff, Coom. Really appreciate your time and love talking to you.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy Zach today.
Yeah.
We will. Yep. I'm looking forward to getting back on the mic. And you know, I've been out at the ballpark the last few days, so it'll be fun. It'll be good to see Zach fresh out of DePaul basketball, so we're going to have a good time and surprise today. Boys, have a great weekend.
All right. Take care.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on 670 The Score.
Birdie can play third base. He's played third base more than I think anywhere else on the field. He's a guy that plays all over, but I think he's comfortable at third base. I mean, I'll give you some idea of the versatility of Birdie. He made his professional debut as a first baseman in the division series last year. That's how much confidence they have in his, you know, positional versatility. Bruhan, the utility guy, can play third base. And Workman, the Rule 5 guy, if he's on the club, he can play third base. So I think there are a number of options before they would turn to Turner to play third base. I could be proven wrong on that, but that's just my sense.
That was Jim Deshays with us yesterday, going through some of those possibilities of what the Cubs may do. The Cubs take on the Rangers today in spring training action from Arizona. Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer on the call starting at 1:55. Cubs spring training games on The Score are sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions. All right, here's the answer to that question with which I left you. The answer is, and Studs, let the record show, Studs had two, as we did this in the pre-show meeting, and just as we went to break, something clicked, and he was very happy that he got this. So, yes, Julius Peppers is one, Cordero Patterson is two, and cornerback Tim Jennings is the only other. Those are the only three ever Bears free agent signings to make more than one Pro Bowl as a Bear.
Tim Jennings was so, just the weirdest two-year flash in the pan, because he had, I looked this up, he had seven interceptions in a six-year career leading up to 2012. Then he had 13 in two seasons, made the two Pro Bowls, and then never had another pick in his last 2 years of his career. It was just the weirdest, like all of a sudden this guy's an all-pro, and then he wasn't good, and then he wasn't any good.
Doesn't that get back to the stuff we played from both Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson when they were talking about scouting safeties? And maybe it applies largely to other defensive backs as well, depending, especially in zone systems, that if you're not necessarily a man, you know, flip your hips, cover corner, that maybe there's just high variance in tipped balls and some of the interceptions.
Yeah, when balls come your way versus when they don't, and are you in position? I mean, being in position is a thing.
Or is the corner opposite you so good that they don't throw it that side?
Peanut was the other corner, right? So
I'm just saying that there's sort of the Tyreek Stevenson thing is when Jalen Johnson is patrolling one side of the field, the other guy, you know, whether it's, you know, Terrell Smith or Tyreek Stevenson, is going to see a lot of action over there. You're going to get your chances.
I think for me, trying to figure out, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how good their current number one cornerback is. You know, we had that debate last season about, like, how good is he, because they never throw at him. And then he got thrown at a little bit late in the season, and it wasn't all, you know, gravy out here. So I really want to see what that looks like this year under Dennis Allen.
All right, so here's the latest on what is happening with the Cubs and their preparation for the early opener in Japan and what's going on at second base and third. This was Craig Counsell yesterday. Here's the latest update on the health of Nico Horner.
We're excited about where Nico's at. I think it's all good. This is a good news situation. It's, you know, for Nico, it's not necessarily good news in that just he has to miss two games and has to miss the trip. But on the other side of it, it's good news because I think we were very much like tracking towards opening day, like domestic opening day, of him being in good shape, of him being ready for that and prepared for that. So, you know, it stinks in terms of like not getting to be part of the trip, but his rehab is really in the last kind of couple weeks has, I think, we think, really taken a step forward. Maybe 3 weeks has taken a big step forward. And he is kind of starting to progress quicker. And so we're in a really good spot. And if we can have him for domestic opening day, I think, you know, going back to surgery date, that'd be a really positive result.
I mean, this is, I guess, what we expected. And the fact that he's saying he is going to be, well, he's projecting that he'll be ready for opening day, that is good news.
I have a question in just a second, but first let's hear what Craig Counsell is saying about Matt Shaw and his oblique injury.
His first game is trending towards this weekend, so we're not at a point to make any decisions on Matt yet. He is getting healthy, essentially. Like, so obviously if he's playing in games, likely on Sunday, I think, is the day we're targeting for that. No decisions have been made there.
Okay. Here's my question. Why can't they make the trip?
I mean, I guess they could, but I think they get more work done if they stay put.
I know, but this is a pretty special thing. And is it really, does it, I just think it'd be nice if they could be included in the trip. And you've got enough equipment and training staff and all that. I mean, I know you may not get your full total work in, but that seems like it kind of sucks.
No, I'd rather them get their full total work in and be ready for domestic opening day. I think that's an easy call. I understand the sentiment.
Does it mean
I understand the premise?
Are you really not going to be ready because you took a couple days to go to Japan?
Dan, you act like opening day on the domestic side is like 3 weeks later. It's like a week later.
I know. That's really too bad. Like I would think that there would be a way. You're not going to rural Alaska. You know, there's going to be opportunity to get plenty of work in.
That is a long flight each way, by the way.
Yeah.
And therefore,
but they're flying very comfortably.
Do you want Matt Shaw and Nico Horner to have a chance to be ready for opening day or not?
Yes, I do. But okay.
Why play with that?
I don't know. I just it's a trip to Japan, though. I mean, that seems kind of cool. Like to go with their if it's do you get a plus one? Does everybody get a plus one?
That's a better question than the initial question that you asked. I don't know. I was thinking about that. Are they having people bring their families and all that stuff?
I wonder. Some teams look at that as a big cultural ambassadorial opportunity. And
isn't that what the Bears do?
Branding. Yeah. Like there might be a second plane for some teams just for family. So that would really...
Maybe they are doing something. I would expect them to do something like that. It's a big deal.
That's what I mean.
You're opening the season... It's a big deal.
I don't know. That's just something that was sort of in the back of my head. Like when he says, it sucks he doesn't get to make the trip. I'm like, take him out and bring him, you know, put him in a suitcase or something.
Put him in a suitcase or something.
They should let the injured players come on the trip. Oh, sorry. It's your fault. You're hurt. You got to stay back here.
Dan, the games are on the 18th and 19th of March.
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
They're not ready. The next regular season game is on March 27th. In order to be ready for that later date, they need to focus on whatever it is they got to do between then and there. And the travel days, both ways, that's days that are not getting work done. So, I this is the smart play. Very much so.
I know.
I would think they can get work in Japan. Like, what...
I'm saying the two travel days are the bigger deal.
You can stretch on the airplane?
You can stretch on... See how you've devolved it?
On the Cubs airplane, I'm sure they have space to stretch.
Right.
You could
do the Russell Wilson high knees down the aisle.
You gotta do a whole lot of... All right, an oblique. Okay.
And a flexor tendon.
And a flexor tendon, yeah. You guys are cracking me up on a Friday.
I'd be pressing to go.
Of course you'd be pressing to go. Who doesn't want to take a trip?
I just booked my own flight. Man, I'm going.
No, we need you to do your work every day, every morning.
I'll do my work.
You won't, though, because you won't have the supervision necessary to get the work done.
Give me a list of what I need to do, coach.
You guys were the guys definitely, like, did you play team sports and ever just take but I'm saying, yes. Just take a break and just say, coach, I'm missing practice for the next week. I'll be ready, though. Don't you worry. And then you get benched when you come back.
These are professional athletes. Well, you know?
It is different. That's why it's so much
more
important.
It's not like they're going to be skipping practice. I'm saying they're going to, if you're not going to let me go, I'm going to go anyway, and I'll just join you guys. Are you going to not let me into the stadium if I show up in Japan?
Man, y'all are wild.
How are you going to get there?
He says he's going to book his own flight. Said that these are millionaires. These are not regular people.
I know. It's still expensive, though. That's still...
It's not that expensive.
Yeah, it is. And the difference is that charter flight?
Well... No, not to charter a flight.
It's saying that you just buy a ticket?
Yeah, like a first-class ticket.
Yeah, let me see. Nico's making $12 million this year. I think he can afford it.
I know we can afford it. It's still a big number, though.
It's not that big of a number.
Yes,
people
it
do
is.
It all the time. People do it all the time.
This close to the day, a first-class ticket from O'Hare to Tokyo?
Now you're going
to
make me look
right
it up.
Right now?
That's what we're doing.
It's only $15,000.
Okay. $15,000?
What do you think it is?
I would say it's... First class, I'd say 6,000.
This close to their flight?
I don't know, but I'm about to find out. Okay.
I think it's probably a limited number of seats. I don't know how many direct flights there are. I don't know what it would be.
There's enough direct flights.
Okay.
Flight to Tokyo.
You're going to book
I'm booking it right now.
You're going to end up actually getting it.
What's the date? Did I say the 18th? So I need to go on the 17th, right?
Probably earlier.
Are you flying from Phoenix, though? You got to make sure you're flying from Phoenix, Chicago.
That's right. That's a great point because I definitely had Chicago.
Now it's
going to
get more expensive.
Less expensive,
that's
right? It's a shorter flight.
You're closer to the coast. Like LA, you're flying to LA.
There's
plenty of flights from LA. It's gonna be
from LA.
It's gonna be Phoenix to LA. There's a billion flights a day.
All right,
from
you figure
to LA.
That out, travel agent.
I got you. I'm making sure though that I'm putting the right dates in.
I just think it would be nice if the injured players could still make the trip and say, "Oh, look, we're in Japan. And it's a fun thing, and we get to do this, and it's a kind of a rare opportunity for us." And they're all millionaires. They can travel on their own time, go to the backfields, take some ground balls.
Oh, sheesh.
What is it? 12,000? What is it?
The lowest price. I just use Google, because they'll tell you everything.
I'm telling you. What is it?
Starting at $18,117.
Woo! That's what I mean. Like, you might be a wealthy person, but you don't get wealthy being stupid.
Yeah, but...
Yes.
The $18,000 is still a drop in the bucket for a multimillionaire.
No such thing. No such thing as a drop in the bucket for anybody.
I disagree. If you're a billionaire, that's a drop in the bucket.
Billionaire?
But it is. But it just still doesn't mean you are wired to want to spend it.
No.
Don't you see these team owners? Come on, man. Look around.
I think a flight is different than signing a $100 million contract.
I'm just saying.
It's an investment.
Which itself is still is a drop in the bucket for a billionaire.
A bad spend is a bad spend.
Man,
Warren Buffett, to this day, when he stops for his McDonald's breakfast, he's got change in the console of his car that he cobbles together to get himself his Egg McMuffin. You don't get rich being stupid.
I can't believe it's that much.
A billion. All right, if you're a billionaire, do you understand how, like... Oh.
You have your own plane then.
Well, yeah, of course you do, but this isn't... All right, it doesn't matter.
If you're a billionaire, you go wherever you want because you have your own airplane.
Have you ever seen the Rice video? Where they take
jet airplane.
One piece of rice represents, I believe it's $100,000. And then they show you, obviously, 10 pieces of rice is a million. And then so when they put a billion next to that...
I know where the commas go. Yes.
I think it's very different knowing where the commas go and seeing the rice.
No, I get the concept. Trust me. Like I said,
a lot of money, right?
Compound interest is another one, too.
So bottom line
is that for you.
Nico Horner and Matt Shaw are not going. But Matt Shaw, we got an update on him, too, right?
Yeah, we played it.
Okay.
He said they're going to start a game next week, and they're not sure yet. So
on the domestic opening day.
Yeah.
So John Birdie? Nal Brewer?
Sure.
Nicky Lopez? I'm just throwing names out here.
All right, apparently. Let's get the latest on these Matthew Stafford rumors and what could be a very weird veteran quarterback carousel when we come back. This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Could Mike Florio have been more right than he knew? We'll talk about it.
Who's your favorite rock star?
You're Prince.
Bruce.
Prince.
Bruce.
Bruce Levine.
Just had a text from Bruce Levine.
Hi, Bruce.
Noted baseball aficionado, been around town for a long time.
Score Baseball Insider.
Bruce, I really do appreciate the way you communicate up front, transparent, direct, and you've been doing it for years. Happy to come on your show anytime. It doesn't matter if you're in Chicago or New York or L.A. or whatever. Like, I enjoy talking to you, and Matt, it was good to talk to you today.
Thanks, Kate.
Covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Can I ask you a question about that?
I'm going to go through my speech.
Yes, sir.
Take a look at it.
With the idea that...
And the essence of Bellinger, I think every team wants it on their vanity. Bruce, you step on my lines once more, and I'm telling you, you're the back of the group.
Bruce Levine.
Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Is that your station?
I don't know.
On 670 The Score.
Joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline is Bruce Levine. Download the Circa app today.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, guys. How's everything going in Chicago?
I was doing fine. I was on vacation, and I get back, and I hear, hey, you know, Bruce didn't shout you out with counsel during the conversation about the show. And I was like, not my guy that I would consider a mentor.
Did they play the tape for you?
They did.
Okay.
I know.
What did I tell counsel?
Well, we could play it again.
You said.
Oh, no, we lost.
Right?
With that, Bruce,
right?
You're breaking up a little bit. Say that again,
sir. Say it again.
I said it's Lawrence Holmes, right? Along with Speaks.
I don't think we heard that part of it, Bruce.
He might have said that part
of
it.
Yeah, maybe we just didn't have that part of it.
I did.
All right.
I said, do not call him Larry. Do not call him Larry.
So that's where counsel got it from, not from his old days of listening to the station.
All is
forgiven.
Because when I talked to counsel a couple days after that, he said, yeah, don't call me Larry. He got that from you, Bruce Levine.
Yes.
All right, then
we're trying to keep him straight.
Good. Keep him straight, Bruce. Him straight. Now I'm back on Team Levine.
Right,
now
good.
We're back,
all
baby.
Right, thank you.
Because I mean, because I talk
so
with Bruce
easy to get canceled.
I talk with Bruce so much
so many
about
times on our own station.
I know, but I mean, look, you and I have had countless conversations about the manager's show and how you like how I've done the manager's show with the previous two managers. So that's all.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. No, I try not to run afoul of any teammates, but you know, as you do your journalism thing and your reporting thing, some people are just not going to like you and your stuff. That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it goes.
Life.
And then as we do our score thing, as you know, Bruce.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm still treated like I'm working at ESPN. You know, it's no different. You know, it's like that guy down the dial. Oh, by the way, he does his show here on Saturday. Oh. Yeah, that's me.
No.
See, it's fun. I love the challenges of Chicago radio. It's one of the great gifts that I've had in my life. I'm sure you guys feel no different.
I think that he's right, and I think we didn't do our journalism thing.
Yeah, maybe we didn't. Maybe
we did not.
We actually did our score thing. That's
yeah,
the problem.
He's right.
Yeah.
Bruce is right about all of that.
Understood,
so,
Bruce.
So, Bruce, why don't we add some journalism to the score stuff? What's going on with the Cubs infield as far as injuries go?
Yeah, so, you know, Matt Shaw is on his way to playing in his first Cactus League game on Sunday. He's been struggling since February 5th with an oblique issue. And, you know, as we know, as we've learned in baseball, obliques usually take 3 to 4 weeks minimum for them to clear them and be able to come back, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter and play. And so Shaw has been cleared. Fully cleared to go full out starting on Sunday. He'll be playing, and it's a big story moving forward because it's not just Matt Shaw, the Cubs third baseman. It's Matt Shaw, the rookie third baseman, that has to show he can handle the position. He's only had a year and a half in the minor leagues after being a number one pick, and you know, it's really. Sorry for the seventh inning stretch here. It's Kerry Wood on video, by the way. They have to figure out if he can handle the position. So The question next is, does he go to Japan where they're only going to play an exhibition game and two games in an 8 or 9 day period? Or does he stay back here and get reps and get ready for the real opening day, which entails 160 games rather than the two fun games in Japan?
Well, it's a good question, Bruce. Three strikes, you're out of the old ball game. So let's get some runs in Japan. And the way to do that with the bats might be different than the best way to get the defense at second base and third base. No Nico Horner for Japan. We know that today. Now, if there is no Matt Shaw, how do you suspect they line up at those two positions if you had to pin it down today?
Well, it's three guys, Bruhan, Workman, and Birdie. All new guys. Workman is a guy, a Rule 5 guy from Detroit. They got to keep him on the roster all year or offer him back to Detroit for, I think, it's $75,000. Got a big left-handed swing and has home run power. Can play second, third, right field. When we've talked to counsel, he said more about third base, meaning a left-handed bat at third. So it's likely to see him there. Birdie, you know, a veteran guy that's been a starter for many years with the Marlins. He's likely at second. Bruhan can play second, short, third. And then there's Nicky Lopez all the way around, too. Not a lot of those guys can play shortstop, except maybe Bruhan and Lopez. So there's a battle for three spots among those four guys and three spots as to how Council is going to pick out the second baseman and third baseman for the two Japanese games.
So Gage Workman, the former Tiger, the Rule 5 pick, and Vidal Bruhan, who's a 27-year-old middle infielder, fast guy they got from the Marlins when he was DFA'd down there. They traded Matt Mervis for him, jumped into the 10-day period to grab Bruhan. So that was a choice, and they gave up something to get it. That makes a lot of sense. Do you think Nicky Lopez makes this roster opening day, Bruce?
He's really the only shortstop. Let's say Swanson goes down for a week, right? I think Lopez can handle second, short, third for a week for anybody. He's a seasoned guy. He's not going to shake. I think that gives him a leg up on the others. Bruhan can play short, but I think Lopez is a better value there. He's not going to hit a lot. But he's going to add to your team, you know, a veteran that can go in there and play a position while your starter is out of the lineup. I don't think you're going to Nico Horner if he starts the season and then automatically just switch him to shortstop. So they're going to have a backup shortstop. And unless somebody from waivers is better than the guys they have right now, you know, toward the end of spring training around the 20th, 25th of March before the season starts, all of a sudden you see the Brewer, you know, the waiver wires working and you can pick somebody up that's better. That's pretty much the mix right now.
All right. Well, Bruce, we appreciate you keeping us updated and reminding us that we need to get the whole story before we go off half-cocked. We appreciate you, sir, and thank you very much.
Guys, have a great day.
Thanks, Bruce.
That's Bruce Levine.
Off the grudge list.
Yeah.
And back, well, and he was on the guest list even while on the grudge list.
Now you're on it.
Yeah.
You started this.
Somebody's always got to be on it. That's how it works.
It can't be
here.
Empty.
No, it can't be empty.
Can't be empty.
Grudge list not allowed to be empty.
Or else I can't live. You know?
Whatever fuels you, man.
Someone's got to do it. But it does seem like the right amount of days or games at third base for Justin Turner is zero.
I think, yeah, there's some options there. I got to Workman.
But it's nice to know that in some sort of freak emergency, Justin, go get your mitt and get us out of this game. You know what I mean? Like if something happens, you're like, we got to get everyone up out of here, then that's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to deem the situation better than the one 2 years ago in right field that freaked me out that I brought up last segment when Saya couldn't go. There's a pile of options who can actually play the position in terms of Workman and Bruhan and Nicky and Birdie. That's four.
It's so funny, too, because I when they got Nicky Lopez, I was like, I don't know if he's going to make this team.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, but there is no backup shortstop.
There is none. It's a really good argument by Bruce. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's get back to talking football. NFL style. Should the league get rid of the tush push? And who's actually against this? We'll discuss that next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, Ben.
Afternoons on The Score.
Nice hand for Kyle Tucker, the former Houston Astro. Big-time trade acquisition for the Cubs. Kyle Tucker with a chance to show this Cubs crowd what he can do at the plate. That was his first at bat of spring training, and he promptly ripped, I believe it was pitch one, to the warning track in right field. Everybody thought there was maybe a first.
So there were good vibrations?
Oh, extremely good vibrations.
Come on, come on. Feel it, feel it. Feel the vibration.
Matty Matt and the Funky Bunch.
So speed.
Lawrence Lahr and the Funky Bunch.
No, it's got to be.
It's got to be Matty Matt.
Yeah, and the Funky Bunch.
It's true.
I was very excited that you got the opportunity to spend some time down there at Sloan, be down in the desert. Doesn't that feel good?
Oh,
like midday when you're like, oh, the sun is over the mountains
now.
Oh,
man. And I skipped the sweatshirt that is usually mandatory up until like 9:40 or something like that. I just skipped it because it was I was fine. But my goodness, yeah, you can get used to living out there, couldn't you?
You sure can.
I used to be real judgmental about out there. It's like, everything's a strip mall. Where's the character?
Well, not everything.
No, not everything.
I do think, though, we need to go and so I can show you Phoenix. Like, I know that when I say Phoenix, people think I mean Scottsdale. I do not.
You mean Phoenix.
I mean Phoenix proper. I mean downtown Phoenix. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there now. And I think that you would... It would be better for your vibe because you'd be like, oh, okay, this is where some of the independence and artistry and that stuff is.
I get it, but I think what I'm saying, though, is that I'm aging into just...
Oh, you want to be a Scottsdale guy?
I'm readily,
nothing wrong with that.
I'm readily accepting the Scottsdale sheen everything.
I usually make at least one trip to downtown Scottsdale just because things are very easy down there.
Everybody there would have got my limbo jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Everyone.
And that's how you get a 16,000 square foot house in Scottsdale.
So, Lawrence, there were a lot of cool things that I brought back in terms of observations.
Just wait till you get to Kierland.
Yeah? What's that?
Kierland is like super Scottsdale.
Scottsdale on steroids?
It's like what? Like there was just...
How big a house can you get over there?
It's going to cost you. But I took a picture of a Corvette parked across the street from a Ferrari. And it was just like at a mall. And I sent it to... Because my dad likes cars. So I sent a picture and he's like, is that a Ferrari in the background? I'm like, uh-huh. I'm just out here.
Just people living their lives.
Just Kierland. So put that on the list. The next time that you want to go to Kierland Square, the Kierland Commons.
Okay.
And just walk around that wealth for a while.
I will add it to the list.
We were talking baseball.
No,
go ahead,
you're good. You're good. Maybe it's in part because of the Justin Turner acquisition and what I saw at the top end of the demo of that roster. Because I saw the top and the bottom end of the demo really show out in their own ways. Kevin Alcantara looks unbelievable. Like Kevin Alcantara, like at 6'6 with that speed and a gun for an arm out there in right field. Like, I know when Casey got sent away today, like if there's an outfielder, it's going to make this team and make an impression. It's, one of the rookies. It's Alcantara. And so he was exciting to, you know, it's always exciting to watch the young prospect and see the cool body type and the speed and the athleticism and the whole thing. But Justin Turner at age 40, showing up with 16 years of wisdom and effectiveness.
And now it seems like they're going to need him for a while.
Well, but it was the veterans, the way the veterans reacted. Like there was a moment last week where Dansby Swanson was super psyched about Justin Turner. And he was talking about, I haven't seen him since Walker Buehler's wedding, which was entertaining in and of itself. But Justin Turner requested and got Dansby Swanson out to do BP together on his first day in uniform. Justin Turner's first day in uniform, it was him and Dansby together taking BP on the field at Sloan with Dustin Kelly, the hitting coach. All Dustin Kelly was doing, Lawrence, was loading the hitting machine. It was Turner and Swanson one-on-one.
Those are two good guys to just kind of send out there on their own to let them do their work.
Swanson needs help. And Justin Turner is a guy
who Swanson will listen to. It's like when JD Martinez joins a team, and I wanted JD last year. It's like when an OG who can really effing hit tells you, it's a different kind of message for a made guy veteran like Dansby Swanson who still has things to learn.
It's so funny because I'm teaching this spring at DePaul, and one of the sections I decided this year was going to be peer-to-peer. Because a lot of times what happens is that people will want to network, and they always want to network up. And I get that. Like, that makes sense. But when it's peer-to-peer, there's so much stuff that you can find out about. And sometimes the message just is a little softer. Even if guys aren't, I'm sure Cubs, White Sox, whoever's hitting coaches, like, those guys aren't harsh.
No.
But when you're hearing it from one of your peers, and it's like, yeah, you know what? I think maybe you're lowering your elbow a little too quickly. Like,
am I? Oh, I saw what years you had. I watched you. I remember when you won NLCS co-MVP against this very team.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, those types of conversations. When you hear Spiegs and I talking about the idea of what a clubhouse is like what the vibe in a clubhouse is like,
yeah,
or a locker room is like, this is what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
Is there peer-to-peer networking that can help make other people better?
And so there's the Turner thing and the Alcantara thing on two ends of the roster. There's the fact that some of the veterans who are there now, like, you know, John Birdie and guys like that, are smarter and going to give you better at-bats than the Miles Mastrobonis of the world and the Nick Madrigals of the world.
And it's not to say that nothing can't be learned from those guys and their experiences. It's just that when you have someone who has done it for that long at that level, and you already have a relationship built in with that person, the message might be more easily received.
For sure, for sure. But, like, there's some overall optimism for me because of the roster in full and because of Craig Counsell knowing everybody for this extra year now.
That's my biggest hope in the Cubs for 2025 is steeped in the fact that Craig Counsell has had a year to do his whole around the organization thing.
So he knows everything about the whole org and how it all works. And any of the new guys, he was part of the acquisition process in choosing them and okaying them as acquisitions because he's a big time part of that front office, as we know, as Jed said, as Craig said. So this kind of undefinable managerial value that you were hoping to get last year and you didn't, theoretically, you ought to get it this year. So, yeah, you've got Kyle Tucker, who's a better hitter, and you've got Matthew Boyd at the bottom of your rotation, and maybe that'll help. You're minus Bellinger, and you're plus Shaw, which is a projection. You can do all the war stuff and think about, but the managerial value, it should be coming this year in a way that it didn't come last year. That's part of my overall optimism. Like, I'm going over. I would go over on 89.5 wins. I'd go over probably on 90.5 wins.
You brought up a name that I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
Are you worried about Matt Shaw? Because the oblique thing always scares me.
It's a little bit, but I'm not.
And when you add it to Nico, like, and you go,
I'm worried about who plays if he's hurt. I'm worried about who plays a lot if he's hurt. If that's Birdie or it's Nicky Lopez, like, I want that. I mean, I'm glad that BJ Murray Jr. is getting some shots right now after a down year last year. Like, they got to figure out who the guy is after Shaw.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do, like how they, what the mechanism is for Shaw not being on the opening day roster. Like, how they go about that. Like, how they...
If he's not on the opening day roster?
Yeah, because I imagine he won't be,
no,
right?
No, they were pretty positive about this little oblique. Okay. They were saying 5 to 7 days is what they were saying.
Okay.
But I understand that
gives
scary.
You that gives you 3 weeks to get ready for gameplay.
So is the Counsell factor and the Turner Alcantara and just the quality of at-bats on the bottom of the roster, is that enough for me to be feeling the optimism that I'm feeling? Or am I just spiegeling all over myself with a little bit of spring, obviously, and Phoenixness mixed in?
Look, that place messes with people, okay?
That's what I'm saying.
That's
what I'm saying. I know. I have to admit that.
Getting the sunshine Like, that's why I always say that people should go if they can.
My bones felt better.
Of course they did, because it was 70 degrees every day and the sun was out.
My blood was flowing better to everywhere.
And the one thing that the state of Arizona gets right.
Inside the body.
They don't do daylight savings time. So you were also getting 6:30 sunsets. And you were like, that feels about right. Like, it's not great, but it feels about right.
It all felt just about right.
So
every little thing that can mess with your logic. I know
it can mess with you, and then being embedded.
I felt like I was in the best shape of my life.
Of course, because that's what happens when you get out there. You're like, you know what? I am in the best shape of my life right now.
Who's gonna back up Matt Shaw? Maybe it's me.
Someone gets Sully over here. I got some quotes for him on making this thing better. I think that the Cubs are gonna be better, and I think that. Where, to me, it starts and stops is Craig Counsell has had an opportunity to really look at this organization. Jed Hoyer is clearly, and Shane made this point, like when we had Jed on and when Jed has kind of spoken in other places, it's pretty clear that he is feeling the pressure of, I only have 1 year left on my deal. That gives me a lot of hope. And then Kyle Tucker. Like, those three things for me, that says things should get better. Now, whether they will or not, I can't tell you, but I would be surprised if they're not in a better position to compete this year than they were last year, unless there are significant injuries.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we didn't even mention the fact that they've got a proven closer from day one and what that does to a mentality as well. So... Yeah, no, I thank you for helping me find the balance between the Arizonaness of it all.
It does stuff to you, man.
My Spigality in general, or Spigalianism, depending on where you're
Spigality.
You like Spigality?
I like Spigality. Yeah.
That's a good name for a podcast, actually.
Spigality?
Wow. Spigalianism sounds like when you wrong someone. You committed, you exhibited Spigalianism.
Or
I didn't mean to Spigalianate you. Or,
exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly.
It's his governmental thoughts, right?
Oh, right.
Which we don't want or need.
My religion. My religion. Spigalianism. No.
Spigality.
Spigality, yeah.
Spigality is good.
All right. So
I don't want you guys talking about religion again, okay?
Wait, there was religious talk?
It's a great callback. No, it's you and me.
Oh, that's right.
Thanks, Danny.
Speakability?
Vibe was so good, too. Way to go.
We actually went home listening to gospel music together. Like, no BS.
That's a great capper on that story.
Like, yeah, but you didn't get him his rice. Damn it.
Yeah,
that's true. That was the same day I needed rice.
But I did tell him.
You offered.
I said, Speaks, we can go to the store and get rice if you want.
And remember what I said? I said, I don't want to be in the car with you another second.
He got out the car and said, good day, sir.
Good day. I said good day.
Closed the door.
Then I went upstairs and Ruben said the same thing. Good day, sir. I said good day.
I'm glad that he's in on the bit.
Oh, 100%.
That's a good thing. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, I've noticed this. Tanny has definitely noticed this as he pulled out his counter like he was an umpire today. There is something happening at Cubs camp that I don't think any of us could have seen coming. I think it's okay, but it's still a little weird to see how things have happened so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explain next on The Score.
What went into the decision to change numbers?
A few different things. Jed thought I needed a fast guy number. Jed's really good about coming down and for lack of better terms, like being one of the guys. So I've appreciated his openness to my shenanigans and the hairs and all that stuff. So I've appreciated that relationship. But we were outside and we were shooting hoops before stretch, and he came over. He was like kind of talking some crap, like, hey, you're wearing a lineman, this lineman's number and all this stuff. And so he said, if I make this shot, you have to change your number. And I wasn't going to say no to the boss. So I went with it and he sunk it.
Oh, that's a funny story. Great. Yeah, that's PCA talking about his number change. We're delighted to welcome into the program Cole Wright. He was there last week. I'm sure he talked to PCA, among others, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Cole does a great job on the Marquee Network. Good morning, Cole. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, fellas. How we doing? You know, the only problem for Pete was that if Jed missed that shot, he got nothing in return. I mean, nothing. Like, not a dinner, nothing. So we have to teach Pete about some of those negotiations.
That's great, though. He has definitely leaned into and embraced all that comes with being PCA, the personality, Cole. But I think what's most interesting about, again, four games in, it looks like he is continuing the progress that he showed last year and picking up where he left off in terms of being an offensive weapon. He was as a stand-up double yesterday. That shows you his speed, but he also looks very much in command and confident at the plate.
And that's what you want to see, because the back half of last year, you really saw that maturation process start to take shape, and you saw him not just going up there seemingly with no plan of attack. He went up there with one thing and one thing in mind: to get on base, cause damage, create chaos, and let everything else fall by the wayside. And I think that, you know, Pete is a difference maker. He's that kind of guy. Not only can he go out there and patrol center field to the best of anyone's ability in all Major League Baseball, but he can also go out there and put a charge in you. Like, we saw the power that he displayed the last half of last year. So, you know, to say that Pete could be a 20-plus home run guy in the very near future, possibly this year, you know, I don't want to put any unnecessary expectations on the dude, but he is that kind of player. And when he's out there having fun and playing loose, I think that's what you want every player to be. But I think the childlike nature that he plays with, like I said, it just watching him go out there, have fun. He's got stars painted in his hair. He signs autographs for everybody. I just feel like that's what you want to see, and that's what he's going to be able to do this year, just be a spark plug.
Yeah, he had a great end of the year last year, and I think that for me, it's not about his power. It's about him hitting all fields, and he's been kind of spraying the ball from what I've seen in the first few games, four games, I guess. They're undefeated. They're never going to lose. I like this kid because the speed is just wows you in his defensive ability. But I worry sometimes that he's going to try to hit home runs instead of just getting on base and wreaking havoc.
Yeah, I think that his power will just be a byproduct of his game. I don't think that he's going to go out there and look to hit home runs. I think if they happen, they'll happen. But he's wiry strong. I mean, I think that a lot of people, you know, misconstrue Pete's strength by taking a look at him and not really realizing how strong this dude is. And I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that pops out of his uniform. But I do think that, you know, he's the kind of cat who, if you walk into a room and say, hey, who can do 100 push-ups? Pete might just be that dude. without stopping, he can rattle them off. He's going to go win a whole bunch of bar bets. So I just think that the power is going to be a byproduct of him being just a great hitter. And him staying on the ball and being able to spray it to all fields like you leaned into, that's going to be huge. And not just for Pete, that's going to be for every dude on the team. Every guy, if you stay on the ball, and I feel like that could go for every single player in Major League Baseball. I feel like there's such an emphasis that's put on, you know, the long ball and trying to lift. And I feel like home runs are just byproducts of good swings. And if you're a good hitter, I don't feel like you need to sell out and just try to swing with that uppercut mechanic. I just think and that's a whole other conversation for a whole other day.
Right.
But I honestly feel like, you know, being in contact with, you know, the guys that, you know, in the media that we're in contact with that have over 2,000 hits, over 3,000 hits, over 500 home runs, and they're Hall of Famers. The one common thread is that none of those guys swung for home runs. And to say that this brand or this day and age player that does do that, I think that leads people down a bad path, because even the best hitter in the game right now, if you look at last season, Aaron Judge put up the craziest numbers. His batting practice isn't about him trying to hit home runs. It's about him trying to hit line drives over the second baseman and the shortstop's head, and then letting everything game time take control after that. So I just feel like, you know, with the way that we're seeing guys like Pete being able to get on and use their speed and create that chaos on the base paths, I feel like that is the next generation of baseball. And it's funny, because that was two generations of baseball ago, in addition to some of the guys that were able to hit the ball out of the park. But there were also always those role player kind of cats. And I don't think that necessarily Pete's going to be a role player, but I feel like when you look at his numbers, it's 100% not what guys are leaning into. Like, oh, he'll have a high batting average. You know, he'll steal bases. You know, he's just going for just station to station, first to third. And I think that that's what is going to be the most dangerous part of his game this season. And the power is just going to come.
Love everything about PCA so far. And yesterday was even more exciting or encouraging for Cub fans, Cole, because Kyle Tucker made his debut in a Cub uniform. And that's fun to see. And it's partly bittersweet because you hope it's not the last spring training debut for Kyle Tucker in a Cub uniform. How would you describe his personality, how he's fit in early on, and what are realistic and reasonable expectations for him?
I mean, from everything I've seen so far, he's just one of the guys. I mean, he and Craig were sitting in the dugout the other day, and they were having a conversation, and you know, there were more than a few yucks that were coming out of the dugout. And just to see the skipper and, you know, his new star player just gel so early and be in lockstep, I mean, what more could you really ask for? And I think the fact that, you know, PCA is in dead center of a Gold Glover in Kyle and a three-time Gold Glover in Ian Happ, this year's outfield, I mean, it's going to be a no-fly zone. And to have a guy like Kyle Tucker down there and have his presence as a World Series champion, I just think that bleeds throughout the clubhouse. And when you're around a bunch of alphas and you see a dude that's won a World Series and you know that you can't say that, what do you want to do? You want to be able to add that to your resume as well. So I feel like cats on the Cubs, not only do they, you know, just want to maybe learn a little bit from Kyle Tucker, they want to put themselves in that same sentence as a dude like Kyle Tucker.
We also saw Cade Horton, who was once the most touted prospect that the Cubs had. Everybody was kind of waiting on him, and then he suffered an injury. His velocity was impacted by that even when he was healthy. Where is he at, and what did he look like? I think he only started yesterday. Maybe you didn't see him.
Yeah, from everything looks like it's pointing in the right direction. I mean, when you see a guy out there and you're not hearing him on a quote-unquote throwing program,
right?
That's a good sign. I'm always just interested to see how the general progression of Cade Horton unfolds as he becomes a major leaguer. A converted position player turned into a starter, found a pitch at the College World Series, and really has been able to ride the sails of that one. So, you know, more times than not, you see guys that are position players when they make it all the way to the collegiate level, especially when you're able to play at a school like Oklahoma. If you're a position player there, guys that play a position and pitch, it's normally in a relief role. You're either a reliever or you're a closer. So I'm really interested just to see, like I said, the maturation process and the general progression of a guy like Cade Horton, because you don't normally see, you know, converted position players turn into starters. You feel like starting pitchers are almost always born, like starting pitchers and catchers. Like, those dudes are always born. There's just something a little bit different about them. They're very methodical. They like to stick to that routine, and you know, hopefully Cade Horton will be that dude. And like we said, the progression that he's on right now looks to be pointing all signs in the right way.
Talking with Cole Wright from the Marquee Sports Network here on Mully and Haw. So, Cole, when you see the Cubs so far, we have yet to see Matt Shaw. He's somebody that they're counting on in a big way at third base, especially after missing out on Alex Bregman, the very public pursuit of the Red Sox second baseman, third baseman, infielder, let's call him that. What do you expect?
ATH.
Yeah, exactly. Athlete.
ATH.
He's an athlete. What do you expect from Matt Shaw, and how do you think he's equipped to handle those expectations?
Yeah, I think it's going to be let's wait and see how he's doing. I think that's really the biggest question, because, you know, if he is that future corner piece, you don't want to rush it. I feel like there's other guys who can fill in the blanks. And, you know, that leads me to this, because I am a huge Gage Workman guy. Like, he's sight unseen, huh? And I know even with his production in these spring training games, it's only been a small sample size. But when I was out on the field, like, you look at him, first of all, and you see this cat, and you're like, he doesn't look like your traditional third baseman. He's every bit of 6'4". He's long and lean. He looks more like an outfielder or a first baseman. But then you see the way he moves, and you're like, okay, this cat, you know, he's definitely been doing his baseball flows. Because I don't know if you're familiar with those at all, but it's like it's almost like these form of plyometrics. To check it out after we get done talking. But either way, Gage Workman, and then you see him throw, and the dude's got a hose. I mean, he was over there in drills down at Sloan. And I was watching this cat. I'm like, man, I kind of like the way he moves around the field. And then you look at some of his batting numbers from a year ago. Strikes out a lot, has a lot of pop. Steals a lot of bases. This dude's stolen 30-plus bags in the last two seasons, if I'm not mistaken. And then you see him in the first few spatterings of spring training, and what does he do? Knock the other way, stays on a pitch, you know, outer half, shoots it the other way, and then he gets one and hits it out of the park, almost opposite field. You know, kind of dead central, you know, a little bit left center, but either way, this is a guy, Rule 5 draft guy. I mean, he either latches on with the team or he goes back to Detroit. So what I think he's been able to put forth so far, that shows, it's shown me, you know, if I were a scout, which I'm not, but I feel like I've seen an awful lot of baseball in my days, and if I were to walk there sight unseen, Gage Workman would have been one of the dudes that I would have walked away from a bunch of practices with a extremely high ceiling and expectations for. The kids look nice, man.
That's great stuff, especially since, you know, you're trying to figure out Matt Shaw. He's batting, but he's not able to play, and he's got the oblique injury, and you never know how long that's going to take or if it's going to be something that becomes bothersome. It is, you know, it feels like the Cubs need some help at third base until Shaw can get back, and we're not sure when that will be.
Yeah, and hopefully everything is pointing in the right direction for a guy like Matt Shaw, because, you know, the upside with him is tremendous. I mean, he's a hitter, and that's what we saw with the Premier 12. I mean, all the dude does is get knocks, and I love that game because you need a guy like that who's going to be able to help set the table no matter where he's at in the lineup. It goes back to PCA, whether he's batting towards the bottom or if he's batting towards the top a little later in the season, depending on how guys, you know, turn in the power numbers. You know, that's what you always want to see, a guy who can get on base and get after it. Matt Shaw, he'll get you knocks, whether they're base hits, doubles. Every once in a while, he'll run into one and get you out of the park. But hits play in every league, whether you're playing in Police Athletic League in Joliet, Illinois, or you're playing at Wrigley Field. Hits play. If you get a bunch of them, guess what? You have a high batting average, and that could lead to a high on-base percentage if you mix in a walk or two and a hit by pitch. So at the end of the day, I just feel like guys that get hits, come on my team, let's go. Let's go and get hits, and let's get as many hits as possible, and let's paper cut them to death.
So, Cole, you have been there from day one of the Craig Council era. It's only season two, but I just wonder, listening as closely as you have to do on a daily basis and seeing maybe changes in tone or his approach, how would you describe what, if anything, is different about Craig Council this spring training than his first one?
More relaxed. I feel like Craig is more relaxed, and I mean, isn't everybody in their second installment, or when they're, you know, in year two at your job? I feel like there's the subtle nuances that just become second nature, and I feel like with a guy like Craig, you know, he's now able to relax and just take it easy. I feel like familiarity with the media, you know, that's been able to settle in for him. I know it, just the conversations. I mean, they're always going to be business-like, but I feel like they're just a little less business-like. They're a little more conversational. And I don't deal with Craig as much as Taylor does, or as much as Elise or Boog and JD do, but I feel like just in that, you know, 365-day span, he has become a little more loose, a little more revealing with us. So I know the conversations down at Sloan, you know, he'd come and pull up a chair. They had the fold-out chairs that we'd sit on the bleachers, and sometimes we would be done with the whole media session, and he'd just be sitting around talking. We'd be talking about what, you know, just all small talk. You know, how you know his boy's transferring and going to different schools now, and you know, I feel like we were talking about a TV show. You know, I told him I recommended The Righteous Gemstones to Michael Bush, and Michael Bush has not caught on with that yet. Alex Cohen asked him yesterday during the broadcast, still hasn't seen it. Season four is right around the corner.
I'm curious, you know, one of the things I loved hearing from Craig Council was that he did a bad job with Seiya Suzuki. He said he was having trouble communicating with him, and as he thought about it, he realized that there need to be better communication, and hopefully he's been working on that. But that's a really interesting dynamic, say a moving to the DH spot and how he will approach that and how he feels about Proud Guy. Obviously, you open the season in Japan. It'll just be really curious to see how that works out. There's rumors that maybe they end up trading him, but it'll be interesting just to see if he takes to the DH role.
Well, I mean, as we've seen throughout years of watching baseball, it's not easy to DH. I mean, how many legendary DHs really are there? I mean, there's only a handful. You know, there's not a whole bunch of guys who have that narrowed focus and are able to sit there and not go out and grab a glove and go play defense and then come in and swing it. It's tough to do. I mean, sometimes you have 20 minutes in between at bats. Sometimes it could be an hour and 20 minutes in between at bats. So to be able to maintain that focus each and every single game, you know, I think Seiya could be up to the challenge. It's easier said than done, but we really see him at his best when he's able to get comfortable and nestle into a role. If he knows from the very beginning of the season that he's going to be DH and Kyle Tucker's going to be playing right field, you know, there's really going to be no wiggle room. That's what it is. If he can set his mind on being one of the best DHs, if not the best DH in the National League as well as the American League, then I think that you might see some pretty good stuff from Seiya Suzuki, because even though I feel like we haven't seen the best of Seiya Suzuki, you look at his numbers from last year, they're pretty damn good. I mean, the dude put up some numbers, so I feel like if the best is yet to come from this dude, that's a good sign, because Seiya Suzuki at his best is a dangerous weapon.
Quickly, Cole, before we let you go, have to ask you about the latest addition to the Cubs roster, minor league contract. But Travis Jankowski is an interesting pickup. Huh. Last we saw him in Chicago, he was robbing Andrew Vaughn in one of the biggest catches of last season, biggest highlights of the year. Now he joins the Cubs, all speed and defense. What do they think? Could he make this team?
Anything's possible. I mean, we saw him last year. Was it last year or 2 years ago, you know, hitting that walk-off against the Cubs? So, I mean, a guy who only hit one home run that year, I mean, it seems as if he does have a flair for the dramatic. And, you know, I feel like competition, it's going to breed excellence. So if he goes out there and competes, maybe that'll get the best out of him. And he'll be able to kick his game up to another notch and take it to another level. So, I mean, if I was in charge of making out rosters, if he was a guy who impressed me, I the names don't necessarily always matter. It's all about winning and who can help us win the most and put the best team out there on the field. And I think that's what Craig and that's what Jed and that's what Carter, that's what they're looking to do. And I think that's what we'll see here real soon.
Great stuff, Cole. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Really appreciate all the info.
Thanks, Cole.
Likewise, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Bernstein and Harris.
Bill, you're on the score.
Dan, I don't always like you, but I seem to lean your way most of the time.
Middays, Tyndall 2.
Thanks. No, crazy.
Shaw is doing great. We're hitting in the cage. Doing really well there. Kind of progressing onto swinging, onto throwing. We're doing well.
Okay, good. Okay, I didn't like to hear that when camp started that Matt Shaw, the presumptive starting third baseman, had an oblique injury, but it seems to be coming along, I guess. So that's all good. But let me ask this first. We were just sort of I think Studs was out when I was telling Ray about this. So don't ask how it happened. One time we were talking a while ago, and I was talking about something I saw, like with the Giada De Laurentiis, or it was a recipe, a Giada recipe. One of her people heard me talking about Giada and said, "Hey, I know you're a fan. We have all these products. She has this new product line coming out called Giadzi, and it's some really cool things." So they said, "Hey, can you be an influencer for us? And we just want to send you some gifts." So I said, "Sure. Why not?" So
that's how it starts.
They sent a bunch of stuff to the house, and like all these awesome olive oils and these really cool canned proprietary tomato that only she's growing, and the Calabrian chili paste that's incredible. All these fresh pastas, or not fresh, but dried pasta, but really high end pasta, and it was very cool. So we've enjoyed it, and I got a note the other day. It said, "Hey, Easter's coming. Do you want to get a giant
chocolate Easter egg. So
you said yes.
I said, sure. It's a $70 Easter egg, a $70 chocolate egg that weighs a pound and a half. And it's on the way. I think it arrives tomorrow. And they said, you have to hit it. You have to break it with a hammer or a rolling pin. And you, obviously, it's great chocolate, better be great chocolate. And then inside, there are other surprises. And I don't know what the other surprises are. Do you want me to break it open here?
Yes.
I say yes. Yes.
Why would you not? I'm trying to understand the cons to this, pros versus cons.
Just, I don't know. I have to, as long as I bring some home to the wife and the kid.
You mean after we break it open?
Sure. Yeah. I'm just want to make sure they get to taste some of it too. But I just think it would be fun to have. I've never seen a $70 massive pound and a half chocolate egg filled with things before. Okay. So that's a yes? We're all a yes?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Then we'll do it.
We can have some of the chocolate, right?
Hell yeah.
Okay. That's as long as. Yeah, we're in.
Yeah, good. Okay, it's supposed to arrive tomorrow, and I'll bring it in. Now we had what? No, you didn't. 847. I've had one of those. I had never even heard of them. How could you have had one already?
Cause man, other people have more refined palates and experiences. Maybe they're also an influencer type person.
I guess. Jeez. An expert in baseball prospects is Sam Dykstra of MLB Pipeline, who has been following a lot of these prospects for a while, knows Matt Shaw well, and had some very nice things to say about his potential breakout season.
The Cubs' third base job is wide open right now, right? Everybody believes that it is Matt Shaw's job for the taking, but the Cubs were right in that Alex Bregman mix right up until the end. He signs with Boston, so third base is still open. I really like Matt Shaw. It's a funky hitting style. His front foot is kind of turned in. He's got a massive leg kick, but it's power that works to all fields. He's 55 run. Ooh. He could be a 2020 guy at just 5'9". He grew up in Massachusetts idolizing Dustin Pedroia. If you can get a Dustin Pedroia type at third base for the Cubs, that's really good. Obviously, they're in win now mode, so they'll look at multiple options at third base. They brought in Gage Workman in the Rule 5 draft. They just signed Justin Turner. He's more of an insurance policy at third. He's probably going to play more first and DH. But Matt Shaw dealing with a left oblique strain right now. That's why he didn't play yesterday, but he's hitting in the cage for our Jordan Bastion. I think there's a lot to like there. And again, with that PPI consideration being there, I think Matt Shaw could very well be in the Rookie of the Year consideration if he's given 140-plus games for the Cubs.
Ooh.
I would like to add to those comments.
Please do.
I believe that Matt Shaw is in as good a position as anyone else to win Rookie of the Year based on the fact that he's got the pedigree he has. And he's going to be playing in a lineup that is going to be potent.
Who are the other candidates? Obviously, it's got to be Sasaki.
Sasaki's the guy, if you will. Also, Dylan Cruz is getting a lot of early, I don't know if run is the right way to say it, but he's getting a lot of attention. Let's say it like that. He was on that LSU team that won the 2023 College World Series. And since he's a Golden Spikes Award winner, he also comes with that type of pedigree that we're talking about.
National League Rookie of the Year, it's Roky Sasaki is plus 225, Dylan Cruz plus 380, then Matt Shaw at plus 435. After that, big drop-off to Bubba Chandler, Jordan Lawler, and Tirso Ornelas. That looks like a made-up name. And then American League, is it Jason or Jason Dominguez? Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, Jacob Wilson, Jackson Job, and Will Wagner.
Okay. I think the biggest thing is he gonna get out of the gate at a decent clip? If he starts off not necessarily strong, but just moderate, then he's gonna have a chance. You know how it goes with rookies, especially. The book gets out on you, they make adjustments now. Can you make the adjustments midseason? But he's gonna get the everyday reps to start the season. That's the point. So you have a window in which you can do Chris Bryant like things, and I don't say that meaning produce exactly like Chris Bryant did when he was Rookie of the Year, but you have a window to win Rookie of the Year because you play every day. That's the goal.
Well, let it happen then. You have a chance to accrue a lot of wins above replacement, especially if your defense is good. That's the thing about the WAR number, is that if you can play strong defense, then you can just carry some of that, the positive
math on that aspect of it to allow the other parts of your game to catch up a little bit. That was always the thing about why Mike Trout was so valuable, that just him playing an inning in center field just drove the WAR number up, let alone before he even picked up a bat. So
he's not Andrew Benintendi is what you're saying.
Stop. I will say, though, Gage Workman looks...
Oh, you just love the name. You just wanted to say his name. Just be honest.
Gage Tater Workman?
It's the tater that gets you.
He looks baseball-y. He really does.
He sounds baseball-y. He looks baseball-y.
He sounds baseball-y. But the guy who, if you've been watching any spring training games, and I've had the perfect time of just having some of the games on, and then you kind of look over there, Alcantara has got that. He's 6'6". Like, you start looking at the O'Neill Cruz and Ellie De La Cruz. I'm not saying he's that good, but the body type is right there. I don't think he's quite as twitchy as either one of those guys athletically, but he's got some levers on him, man.
I listened mostly to baseball this weekend because I was doing other things, but... I am interested to see once we get into everybody playing. And this is why I do like the fact that they're playing those two games in Japan. It feels like you're going to get a very much a sneak peek at the Cubs and Matt Shaw. I'm trying to remember what he said about Matt Shaw's return from the oblique. I mean, it's going to take some time, but it's not obviously serious. I want to know what that looks like in that lineup. And it's not going to be a completed lineup for those first two games. But certainly will give us a taste. Sometimes you just need a taste to get in the flow of things.
I'll be fascinated to see how they're going to fill out the very end of this roster. Because do you want the versatility of Bruhan, even though the stick is in question?
It's Craig Counsell. What? So he's going to want the versatility.
I don't know. It depends how good Workman is. Workman's probably a more reliable hitter. And it's hard to tell this time of year because there's so many pitchers who are
not good.
Are either not good or they're good and not really trying.
They're working on things. So you're not getting what the actual representation of Major League Baseball pitching is on a plate appearance experience.
That's why you can't. It's so getting excited about spring training is just silly. These are practices.
Now stop. You get excited about the games because crack of the bat.
Not the games though. You don't get excited about the outcomes. You can get excited about how individual players look.
Yeah.
A certain highlight, but don't. This happens every year. I feel like we've got to tell people that their record doesn't matter. Nothing for good or for bad. Nothing about spring training matters because they aren't looking at this. The manager doesn't go in and say, all right, how do I get 27 outs? The manager's just basically saying, who's playing, what are we looking at, and when can I go golf?
Those are very important questions. Some would say that last question is as important as the others. I think for Craig Counsell, the good news is you have someone who has not only done this, but has done this at a very high level for a long time. But the track record is strong. I wish we had the faith in other coaches, people leading teams on the field or on the court, on the ice, as we do in Craig Counsell. That would be nice. But we don't. But I do trust Craig Counsell's instincts on how it's set up, how he wants to approach it. Think about it like this. With other teams going to play like these two games in Japan and then coming back, you'd be like, oh, I don't know. This could be tricky. But with Craig Counsell, you're just kind of like, whatever he says, it's fine.
Meanwhile, so the person who says they got one of these giant Easter eggs, he just says, have fun breaking it open.
Oh, that makes it even more fun to do on the radio.
All right. I don't want to lose an eye or anything. He said that my sister's significant other bought it for the family. There's a video of us breaking it open somewhere. And this other email says, Uncle Julio's Mexican restaurant chain has a similar chocolate egg. No, I've seen that. This is way, way bigger than that.
They sent you a picture of it?
It's a pound and a half.
No, I got you. I got you.
It's way bigger than that one. And meanwhile, what happened to Uncle Julio's? What happened?
I'm not familiar with the establishment.
It was so good for a while, and then like private equity bought it.
Oh, and then it became not as good.
I don't know. Then it became like eating in an airport. I don't know. It was just really, really weird about that. It's just and then the good one closed here. I don't know. My guess is whenever something like that happens, private equity is to blame. It's my easy go-to to say it's got to be. It's got to be some Alden Capital or Bain Capital or something like
Maybe
that.
Maybe the Ishby has bought it, you know?
They're not private equity folks, though.
I know. I was just making a joke about rich people in general. That's all
right.
It was.
But yeah.
I punch up. I don't punch down.
I see you working. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein here, Sports Radio 670 WSCR. The Score, talking Matt Shaw and the Cubs. And when the time is going to come, I don't know how much time he's going to need. I wouldn't push it. I figure you've got enough veteran stopgap help if you don't think he's going to be able to start the year.
Oh, no. You're talking about the injury or you're talking about him as a prospect?
Injury.
Okay. Injury is one thing, but no, as soon as he's healthy, put him out there, let him go to work.
Okay. But it's the whole as soon as someone is healthy when it comes to an oblique.
But they told us it wasn't serious.
They always tell you that.
They don't. No, they don't. Sometimes it is serious.
Okay.
An oblique?
It's always serious. That is always a pulled muscle in your side when you are a professional baseball player is always serious.
Well, professional in any sport, really. You need to be able to turn.
But yes,
the swing is
the actual one on your left side when you're a right-handed hitter.
I got you.
I want to see it though. I want to see that big leg kick and see if against 100, you got to make sure that foot's down, hands are back.
They do throw hard these days.
100. Everybody throws 100 except the Cubs. And that's why it's notable that Sahat have said, get excited as you want about labeling one of these guys an ace. They don't have a Tarek Skubal. They don't have a Garrett Cole. They don't have that guy at the very top.
Who's making the baseball decisions again for the Cubs?
Jed Hoyer.
Okay. Trust me. Jed Hoyer is going to make a move between now and the trade deadline when people become available to get somebody front end.
A front end starter?
I think he's going to have to.
You think so?
His job is on the line, Dan. Yes, I think he's going to make a move. He's just biding his time until teams are ready to be sellers.
Okay.
I think he's in constant conversation with anybody that's got a front end starter that might be. He's willing to. I don't want to use the word overpay in like this in a vague sense, but I think he's willing to pay top dollar, top asset to get a guy like that, because I think we all see that elephant in the room and understand it.